I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 23, and we continue our month-long look at Halloween Havoc as we travel back to 1997 on what might be one of the best WCW pay-per-views we will ever review as we continue Monster Mash Month!
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abodes to catch a joke from my electrodes.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having...
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is right. It is Monster Mash Month, still continuing, even though we got about a week left, which means I have to game this out. I'm going to have to finish the next pay-per-view I am watching, next Halloween Havoc, which we'll get to by the end of the show. I'll be out by the end of the week, or I'll be out hopefully before Halloween. Man, this Monster Mash Month has actually been fun, actually. It's just finding the time to record and, you know, be easily distracted by, you know, ooh, something shiny, ooh, something shiny. Boobs. Boobs. Oh, by the way, there are boobs in this pay-per-view that we'll get to. Because everything around me revolves around boobs. Did I mention I like boobs? But WCW Halloween Havoc 1997 is our topic for today, and man, oh man, wow, for whatever reason, I remember watching this, I have a faint memory of, I guess, still watching WCW maybe around this time, or maybe not. I have really no memory of this pay-per-view. I just, for whatever reason, was I still watching WCW around this time, and actually... coming to the conclusion that I wasn't, because I have no memory of Bill Goldberg. You know, I saw Bill Goldberg's first match, I think, after I came back, and I think I saw it, like, in the infancy of YouTube. I went back and saw Bill Goldberg's first match. But, so I don't know why. It's something I always go back, like, did I see him face Hugh Morris, or did I not? I could never remember. I really couldn't. I really don't think I was still watching it. 97, it's like, why do I have these faint memories? It's like, I always felt like I was always watching it, I just don't have memory of watching it. But yeah, so this is really around that time where I wasn't watching WCW. So really, I got to really watch this pay-per-view for the first time. Oh my god, this is one of the best pay-per-views I think I've ever seen WCW put on, period. There's so much good stuff. It's just, unfortunately, like true WCW fashion, they fuck it up in the end with Hogan. And do you realize how hard it is for me to admit that Hogan fucked it up? Or at least Hogan's match fucked it up. I don't know that Hogan fucked it up. No, sad part is, like, you're going so well, WCW, and then you give me a clusterfuck. So, yeah. There's a lot to talk about, but there's so much good to talk about. Oh my god, I was so enjoying this pay-per-view. I enjoyed every match. Up until Hogan and Piper. Even the match that is like the second worst of the night, it's still a generally good match that has a lot of fun storyline into it. And we'll get to that match when we get to it. But why don't you say we get into the review proper so I can get to all those things. So Halloween Havoc 1997 took place on October 26th, 1997 at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, with an attendance of 12,457 in Paradise, Nevada. Because I guess technically that's no longer Las Vegas, it's now Paradise, Nevada. Well, can you think of anything that would be paradise? I mean, gambling, boobs, free buffets, boobs, adult entertainment award shows, and boobs. Did I mention the boobs? Fill out Las Vegas. I think it's paradise. But yeah, so Paradise, Nevada, with the tagline of "Snap into the Madness," of course, because this Halloween Havoc is sponsored by Slim Jim. Slip into a Slim Jim. Ooh yeah. As of course your color commentators will be Bobby the Brain Heenan, Tony Schiavone, Dusty Rhodes, and of course, later, or at least for the first three matches, joined by Mike today. So let's snap into our review of Halloween Havoc 1997. There's no dark matches to talk about. So we have every match happen on the pay-per-view. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 matches, 9 matches for the night. Our first match of the night is Yuji Nagata with Sonny Ono versus Ultimo Dragon. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you wrestling fans, Yuji Nagata, probably, I would think, for those who didn't watch WCW, you may have best seen him in 2008 when TNA did a whole big thing to where they went over to Japan. Because at that time, Kurt Angle was the IGPX champion. There was actually a time where he was holding five different belts. And Kurt Angle, in this event, that I think it was a cross-production between TNA and I want to say New Japan. There was a match where Kurt Angle faced Yuji Nagata for the belt. And it is it's a match that reached Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle levels for me. I mean, it was seriously that good. If you've not seen it, you'll probably find it on YouTube. Again, not that I would suggest going to YouTube. I know TNA has their site, but like, to find it real quick, that's the best place to find it. I mean, too bad TNA doesn't have something where you can only spend $9.99 a month to, you know, watch all their pay-per-views like the WWE Network does. And again, this is why WWE constantly kicks TNA's ass. But fans would probably best know him from that. This was fairly, I want to say fairly early in his career. Let me double check to see when he started. He started in 92, so this was before his career, because he's still wrestling. So yeah, I guess it would still be considered fairly early in his career. Because this is right when he joined WCW. He had wrestled for 1, 2, 3, 94, 95, 96. It's 5 years in New Japan, and then he was signed to the WCW. But here, he was part of a feud that was ongoing between Sonny Ono and Ultimo Dragon. Of course, they had split up. And as for the match, I really loved the match. It was a great match. Great technical wrestling. A mixture of technical wrestling, mat wrestling, high-flying, just... It's your prototypical, actually, Japanese New Japan match that's really good and really fun to watch. It's like, if you want to look at the prototype of what makes a good match, at least over there in Japan, this is an example of it. And there's a great storytelling of focusing on the arm, because Ultimo had an injury on the arm and Nagata focusing on the arm. And then just, like, out of nowhere, locking on the arm bar. And forcing Dragon to tap. And a great way to start off the pay-per-view with a heel win, mind you. This is another pay-per-view where the storytelling, where I think the booking led to, again, keeping it a secret to what was going to happen in the main event. Because here you had a heel win. And I know, if you've heard me talk about it in the WrestleCast with Matty J and T-Dub, you know, I talked about how I think booking is important in keeping examples of, who's going to win what match a secret. You know, especially when you're at a major pay-per-view, you know there's going to be a title change. So the title's going to change, you know, if at all. I mean, we saw in SummerSlam, we saw every title change, which I guess was a shocker for that night. So I really believe in that booking can, you know, help hide details or give away details about what's going to happen later in the show. And one thing overall with this pay-per-view I'll say right now is that the booking from front to back, I thought, did a great job hiding, what was going to happen later in the night. Because there was so much storyline. And I really loved the way they told the storyline, as we'll get to. But in this match in particular, the storyline with just this feud was told wonderfully. Great wrestling match. Had a fun. Definitely one of my favorites of the night. So very enjoyable. And again, like I said, I thought the booking decision to have a heel win right off the bat was great in keeping the suspense for the evening. Because as I looked, heel, face, technically face, heel, face. I just thought in the hand, but again, it, alternating everything, as we'll get to it, as you'll see. You'll see what I'm saying later on, and I'll probably talk about it more. Our next match featured Chris Jericho versus Ghetto. I want to say this was early in Ghetto's career. Now, I don't know much about Ghetto, but he's technically still wrestling today, a long-lasting tag team with his partner Ghetto. He's due to his physique and charisma, he's been apparently called in the United States, again, I don't know much of him, as the Dusty Rhodes of Japan, which that's a big push. He started in 1989, it seems. So again, I don't know much about him. This is really like the first match I think I've ever seen of him. And you know, damn, he put on a good match with Chris Jericho. Now, funny thing to talk about here. We've talked on this pay-per-view before about music selection, when music rights can't be gotten or anything. In this case, apparently WWE could not get or obtain Chris Jericho's music licenses for the music he used during his WCW run. So imagine my surprise, Ginda comes out and everything, and then all of a sudden I hear... My surprise that I hear Chris Jericho's Break Down the Walls, and I'm just going to continue playing that in the background. Imagine my surprise to hear that, to Chris Jericho coming out as Chris Lion Tamer Jericho in WCW. I actually kind of had a talk with this with, of course, our good friend TWK, which he thinks this is stupid. I actually kind of like it. I think it's kind of awesome because, honestly, it's to the point to where this is the theme I really know Chris Jericho for. I really don't know him for his WCW theme. And I'm not saying they aren't awesome. It's just that Break Down the Walls is what I know him for. But as for the mess itself, and if I pause it there. Licensing and everything. But as for the match itself, going away from music license, unattainability, and everything like that, I actually really, really enjoyed the match. I thought the match was stupendous and wonderful and awesome. It's a great, solid match. It's one of the shorter matches, actually, of the night. The second shortest match of the night, actually. Behind a match that we'll see in a couple matches from here. But awesome, you know, Ghetto was awesome, and he had a great moveset, and I really enjoyed seeing him in the ring. And of course, it's early cruiserweight Chris Jericho, and you can see everything that would make Chris Jericho the best in the world at what he does later on. I mean, just all those things that would later on be polished up and to make him one of the greatest WWE wrestlers in history. And then just a great ending to the match. Like, the great false finishes and the false setups to where, oh, Jericho misses and you think, okay, Gendo's going to take advantage of this. And he goes and Jericho manages to get out of the way and lock in the Lion Tamer for the win. Two submission victories, by the way. Awesome, which is awesome. I think there'll be a total of four in this match. Or in this pay-per-view, which is awesome for me as somebody who loves submission wrestling. I like that. So, awesome match between Chris Jericho and Ghetto. But with that being said, it is time, you know, for a match that, let's not beat around the bush. This is match of the night. This was match of the goddamn motherfucking year. And maybe one of the greatest goddamn motherfucking matches in the history of professional wrestling. I'm talking about Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Eddie Guerrero in a mask versus title match for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. My God, this was a work of art. It's beautiful. It's the Mona Lisa of professional wrestling matches. And I'm pretty, you know, I have a friend in work, kind of friend. She, you know, when she hears professional wrestling, she goes ape shit because she hates professional wrestling. She thinks it's disrespectful to mixed martial arts in the ring. Of course, I kind of point out, like, you know, without professional wrestling, there probably wouldn't be mixed martial arts as it is today, which she hates. But I guarantee if I showed her this match, I said, look, just say and watch this match. All you got to do. One match. Nothing goofy, just a pure wrestling match. I think she would enjoy it. Because this match, it's perfection. It is as close to perfection as a wrestling match can get. I mean, oh my God. I mean, there is a reason they covered this in the... Mind you, I had planned on reviewing this pay-per-view in particular before the recent Monday Night Wars episode on Flight of the Cruiserweights came out. But as I had not yet watched this yet, when it did, I'm like, I am so glad that I happened to choose this pay-per-view as one of the Halloween Havocs to cover to get to watch this match. And it's just, oh my God, it's amazing. And actually, you know what the thing that really makes this match work? Is it's not that all the terrific, fantastic, amazing moves that come out of nowhere that these two wrestlers literally created on the spot. It's not the extremely fast, never stop, never let you catch your breath pace of the match. You know what it is? It is their botching. And you're missing what botch? To which I say exactly. There are moments in the match where they botch. There are slight little botches. But I've always said there is a difference between a wrestler who just botches and kills the momentum, and then a wrestler that takes a botch and uses it to his advantage to continue the momentum and make something seem awesome. You know, for instance, you know, being off center for catching a guy and changing the move on the fly to something else. So it looks natural, looks organic, as they do in this match. There are times where you can tell, you know, if you know wrestling well enough, you see, okay, there was supposed to be a different move here, but they, I'm trying to think of the word and I'm blanking on it and I apologize, but on the fly, they changed it up and, you know, did a different move, and it made it look organic. The match looked so natural. Everything looked like it belonged. Even from a train night, I can see that, okay, this is supposed to be a different move, but this looks so organic that it fits just as well. And it really, you know, again, it's that trained eye looking at it. It's really trying to review a match and pick it apart. I can tell that there's something different supposed to be here, but this is so organic and so natural in the way they flow and the way they're able to adjust when something goes wrong that it's damn near almost perfection. This is one of my favorite matches of all time. Even though this is probably, I think, my first time ever seeing it, bar none, this has become immediately one of my favorite matches of all time. I cannot believe how amazing this match. And this is knowing how much people have already talked about this match. I mean, oh my God, this match is just amazing. It is match of the night, bar none, no contest. And this is further proof to just how awesome the Cruiserweight division and how they were outshining everything in WCW and how they were the ones that because and you know what? It's the truth. Everybody has to admit the truth, which is that it's the cruiserweight division that made WCW, bar none. Yes, WCW, you know, changed wrestling as far as bringing wrestling into the fact that it needed to be edgy and everything. But as far as from a wrestling standpoint, WCW brought people to WCW. Cruiserweight division brought people to WCW for their wrestling. And you know, there is a sort of side effect here years later in my regard, which is because of this, you have a lot of wrestling fans that they are there just for the wrestling. And so they treat any forms of entertainment as, you know, oh my God, how dare you disrespect this profession this way, you know. And so they discount having good storylines and having good entertainment as part of the promotion. And they're there for just wrestling. And unfortunately, today, the reason WWE is successful is that they weren't just about wrestling. They were about entertainment, you know. And that, I guess, that's an argument really for a different day. That's really an argument to have with somebody who's here with me. But yeah, match of the night. Oh my God, all the different maneuvers, the springboard DDT out of nowhere, the flip somersault to the outside to a hurricanrana, the splash mountain countered into a hurricanrana, shades of Rey Mysterio versus Psychosis, which we covered at Bash of the Beach 1996. Yeah. Wow. Oh my God. This match. And this match, by the way, I did not want to go that way. 1, 2. The fourth longest match tonight. So it had its time. Now this, it seemed, here's the thing, this match seems shorter than its time. It's 13 minutes, 51 seconds. This match seems shorter than that. And it's like, that's how amazing this match was. But we have to move on. I could go on and on and on about this match. I love Rey Mysterio's, you know, I love, again, I've always loved Rey Mysterio and his comic book roots and how he's always shined as a comic book fan. You know, his costume, which was inspired by the Phantom, which I think at this, yeah, I believe it was 96 or 97 that the Phantom movie with Billy Zane had came out. And here you have Rey Mysterio paying homage to that character with this Phantom inspired wrestling gear. God, that's odd. It also makes me feel old because I actually know who he's paying homage to. I know he's paying homage to the Phantom. And I actually haven't read, like, the actual comic book strip. Hey. Of course, anybody who had a newspaper actually read the comic book strip. That's a whole different story. I could go on. You know, how awesome Eddie Guerrero looked and everything. And again, you see, you know what? And you see everything, both these wrestlers, that would later make them huge successes in WWE as well. Oh, WCW. You fucked up. You fucked up when you let these, when you let Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and all those guys go. That was the beginning of the end. Anyways, you know, let's move on to our next match. Our next match is Steve McMichaels versus Deborah's Secret chosen wrestler, which turns out to be Alex Wright. This is part of, I guess, a storyline between Steve McMichaels and his supposed wife, Deborah. Actually, a funny thing, supposedly, apparently, it was supposed to be Jeff Jarrett, who Deborah was managing at the time, but Jeff Jarrett had decided not to renew his WCW contract and return to WWE, WWF at the time. So Alex Wright, who she was also managing, stepped in at this time. You know, and it's an okay match. It's fun, everything. You know, it's Here Comes Mongo McMichaels. And here comes Mongo Michaels. And Alex Wright is just an awesome wrestler. I think Alex Wright is truly underappreciated for how good of a wrestler he was. No, computer. Hey, bad. Bad, bad, bad. Whew, computer problems. Whew. But, this match actually comes to an end when Bill Goldberg comes out and attacks Matt Michaels. Hit him with a spear and then a jackhammer, placing Wright on top of him. Apparently this is a plan as part of Deborah, who payment was giving McMichael's Super Bowl 20 ring to him, and then he attacks Wright, spears him and gives him the jackhammer. Kind of confusing. You know, everybody would, you know, if you saw the recent episode of WCW or Monday Night Wars where they cover Bill Goldberg, they really don't talk about, they talk about like, oh, everything he did were these 2-minute matches. And mind you, of course, they were 2-minute matches. But at the same point in time, you know, here's him being a heel. They act like he was always this face. So here's him being a heel in a way. So I think it makes me look at that episode of Monday Night Wars kind of cross actually here. But, you know, overall it's a nice solid match. It's more of a match that's there to set up. It's kind of finishing a storyline, yet at the same time setting up a storyline for basically a 2-minute match at Starrcade. That being said, we go on to the match, which is my second favorite match of the night. Ladies and gentlemen, the next match is the WCW World Television Champion, Disco Inferno, versus Jacqueline, with the title not on the line, mind you. Oh my god, this match is so interesting. First of all, Jacqueline, because Jacqueline is a gorgeous, beautiful woman, and my god, that outfit. Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you and your girls for putting on a show. But more importantly, even better than that, is the fact Jacqueline put on an entertaining wrestling match. They had such great chemistry in this match of, you know, Jacqueline chasing Disco, and Disco, because Disco can't hit a woman. There's I can't hit her. I can't put a hold on her. I can't do anything with her because she's a woman. And of course, it all eventually leads to Jacqueline rolling up Disco for the win. And the storytelling's awesome. It's just an awesome, fun, entertaining match. I'm sorry. I know there are people that hate Disco Inferno. I found Disco Inferno to be always entertaining. I love Disco Inferno. Disco Fever. Disco Fever. Disco Fever, yeah, 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 yeah. Disco Fever, Disco Fever, Disco Fever, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm sorry, I find him entertaining. You can hate him all you want. And if you need any proof of that, you know, again, the two matches were the two pay-per-views. I believe the other one was Bash at the Beach, where we covered WCW during this time. You had the match against Dean Malenko. That was awesome. And then here you have another great match with him showcasing his more entertaining side. It's wonderful. I love it. So, yeah, second favorite of the match tonight. I love the storytelling. I love everything. I love the chemistry between the two wrestlers here. It's just awesome. Our next match is the WCW United States Heavyweight Champion Kurt Hennig versus Ric Flair. Of course, Ric Flair turning at this point. And these two put on a wonderful, solid match. Of course, Kurt Hennig was part of the NWO at the time. By the way, this you sort of had three segments of matches in this pay-per-view. You have the first three. Now, really cruiserweight division, of course, Mike today is part of that segment for those three. And then you have these three matches here, which is Alex Wright, Jacqueline, and then it's sort of the middle of the night, and it's, you sort of see the same pattern here. You have two matches under 10 minutes, and then a match is about 15 minutes, or like close to that time. Once again, you have two matches that are under 10 minutes, one being close to 5 minutes, and then you have another long match with the title. Now, of course, the next three would be different in the fact that they were all three were it was sort of the three main events, which we'll get to. But you had this pattern for at least the first six matches. You had two matches under 10 minutes and then a match over 10 minutes. And I love the pattern of that. And again, also, as I talked about, the booking here, you had heel, face, heel, face winning with Jacqueline. And again, this match with Ric Flair, excellent, great chemistry with you, great storytelling. So, great wrestling here. Of course, Ric Flair, the storytelling of Ric Flair getting his revenge, though getting disqualified by stomping on Henning while he was tied in the Tree of Woe, by stomping with the title over his head. You hate that he got disqualified, but again, it was him getting his revenge because it wasn't really about the title. It was about him proving that, he's back. And so I love the storytelling aspect of it. So I thought just a solid match all around. You have heel winning technically, but the face also winning at the same time. And again, so you have this great balance here. Our next match is Lex Luger, the Total Package, versus Scott Hall with Sticks and, of course, later Eric Bischoff, featuring special guest referee Larry Zbyszko. I love the storytelling of this match because you have all the classic elements that make WCW, NWO, who the NWO was with the interference and everything. But, at the end of the day, it coming back to bite him in the ass and, of course, Scott Hall having to tap to the torture rack. Zbyszko, I thought, was awesome in this match as a special guest referee. All three men did a great job of telling. So four men, because Stitch was majorly involved. There's a point where Stitch interferes while Zbyszko is arguing with Bischoff and kicks Luger in the back of the head, which allows Hall to give the outsiders edge. But again, and then this also thing towards Zbyszko ends up seeing the instant replay on the big screens towards the back. I'm like, wait a minute, I saw that. Get your ass back here. We're restarting the match. Not gonna end that way. And again, I love that little storytelling element. And I just thought it was great all around because it showed off exactly what made the NWO great as a heel faction. And yet you also had the face winning because they were trying to – I really think they were trying to show this was supposed to be like the start of like things changing for the NWO as far as their complete control. They had complete control for really the past year and a half, and now it was starting to slip. But what does a great job of sort of like, really, are they listening to or not, was our next match. You have the Macho Man, Randy Savage, with Miss Elizabeth versus Diamond Dallas Page in a Las Vegas sudden death match, a.k.a. a last man standing match. My God, this was just this is the longest match of the night. They went all over the place, and it was awesome. Of course, you had your Dusty Rhodes moment of the night where, Diamond Dallas Page, they're like by the entranceway and they're by the graveyard and he hits Savage with something. It's like, that he took the tray from the waitress and hit him over the head with it. It's like, what waitress? Brain and Tavani are like, what waitress? Like, well, it doesn't sound like a waitress tray. It looked like a waitress tray to me. And then later on, there's a waitress later in the match somewhere. Like, somebody takes something from a waitress. Like, there's your waitress. And they're like, I love it. It's just funny commentary. But anyway, commentary was awesome throughout the night. We'll get to something else that I kind of skipped over in a second. I apologize. But just a brutal match back and forth. I see Miss Elizabeth actually get involved in a sort of heel maneuver. It's shocking to me. I'm like, I've never seen Miss Elizabeth get physically evolved. It's like, oh my god. And of course, the ending where they're both trying to get up, the referee's back is turned in a fake Sting, who was really Hollywood Hogan coming and hitting Paige with the bat. Great ending to the show. Or at least great ending to that match. So far, actually, pay-per-view's been really good. Now we have our final match of the evening. You have Roddy Piper versus Hollywood Hogan in a steel cage match. This was, you know, at this story had been that Piper has had faced Hogan twice already. Both times he won. This was the third match. Could he do it for a third time? Now, earlier in the night, there had been a promo segment to where Bischoff and Hollywood Hogan, of course, with black, white, and everything, saying, look, this is a dangerous workplace having to wrestle the cage of Roddy Piper with Sting running around. So we have a demand. We're, you know, unless WCW guarantees that Sting won't be here tonight, we're going to, you know, we're not going to wrestle. And he's like, I'm taking my boots off. And unless I see, you know, this come from WCW officials in a certain amount of time, I'm not wrestling. Well, sure. J.J. Dillon, who was, I guess, the on-screen sort of personality of being the head guy in charge at the time, says, like, you know, I'm not going to let this happen. So you've got it. They, of course, obviously, called the storytelling of Bischoff and Hogan, I obviously didn't expect them to actually write it out and say, all right, you get your wish. Sting's banned from the building. You have to wrestle Piper in the cage. Oh, God. And I love the, you know what? The match started out okay. It really did. It started out okay. The entrances were awesome. Piper's music was awesome. And they started out fighting. It was brutal. Everything went to hell when both men went through the door. I mean, on a very technical, as far as whether the steel cage match works, Hogan should have goddamn won. Because he was the first to go through the door. It's just like, wait a minute. Shouldn't the match be over? Is there no referee here? What the hell is going on? It's like, it didn't make any sense. And then, of course, you have Savage doing this, who does this amazing, gigantic leap from the top of the cage for a sledgehammer, which he misses and hits Hogan instead. You know, but there's these fake Stings, and you don't know who's with who, and none of it's making any sense. And then the match just ends as a thing where, you know, Piper, like, throws Savage out to the the ring, and he hits it. By the way, the cage looks more like a Hell in a Cell without a roof than it does a steel cage. It's the entire thing was a clusterfuck. It ends with Piper, you know, getting the upper hand, throwing Savage out of the ring, and locking on the sleeper hold, and Hogan's arm going down three times, him winning the match. But just so many strange things, the fake Stings, all of which didn't make any sense. And then a supposed fan. I have not been able to find anything. I want to say that it's kayfabe. If anybody has any information about that, because this had to be controversial, because the fan jumps over the top of the cage to help Piper, and then Hogan and Savage start beating on him. And I'm like, if this was a real fan, they probably wouldn't have done that. This had to be kayfabe in some form. But then the show just abruptly ends, and it's very confusing to what's going on, which again, it's an idea that, you know, we're going to have this controversial WTF ending that's going to have people talking so that they'll tune in next Monday, tune in tomorrow night for Monday Nitro, which for the time, I guess, worked, but still, looking back on it, it's, you know, because WCW is gone, it sort of feels out of context, and it's like, what the fuck did I just see? You know what? After watching that, this was pretty much my reaction.
No, 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 no.
Yeah, that was pretty much my reaction. It's, yeah, that was my reaction. But, you know, push comes to shove. So that's it for, like, all the matches. It was just a bad match. I mean, it had so much potential, but it just turned into this giant clusterfuck where you ask yourself, what the fuck was I watching? Which is sad, because the entire pay-per-view is a really good, and it still is. I really enjoyed this pay-per-view. But before we get into rating what I think of it ultimately, because like I said, I still think it's a good pay-per-view. Let's go over favorite moments and favorite matches. Favorite moments number 3. I'm trying to think of, because I could fill this list completely with move. You know what? Damn it. It has to. Each one deserves their own spot. So, all three of these favorite moments came from the Mysterio-Guerrero match. Let me list some honorable mentions. Disco Inferno hitting the drop toe hold on Jacqueline and, like, backing away and being like, I didn't mean to do that! I didn't mean to do that! That was awesome. The armbar by Nakajima, Yuji Namajima, let me get this name right because I'm horrible with Japanese. Nagata, excuse me. That was a really good armbar. The Lion Tamer was a good moment too. But like I said, all three are going to come from Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio. Again, by the way, Rey Mysterio Jr. winning to win the WCW Cruiserweight Champion. There is a rumor that supposedly the mask was actually, he was supposed to lose that mask and lose his mask because Eric Bischoff thought he'd be more marketable that way. And we wonder why apparently, by the way, Eddie Guerrero talked him out of it, saying, no, he's got to win and get the mask is important. To which I say, Eric Bischoff thought this, and we wonder why this company went out of goddamn business. But anyways, so number three is actually the finish of the match because it's that amazing. The only reason it's number three is because it's basically the same finish as the Mysterio Psychosis match. But I guess there's a lot more drama here, and it just feels more natural than it does there. But whereas what I'm talking about is Eddie Guerrero goes for a splash mountain bomb from the top rope, and in midair, Mysterio counters it into a Hurricane Rana roll up for the pin. Whereas with Psychosis, Mysterio, this felt like out of nowhere and spontaneous. Here, it just felt more organic. And the move flowed more, I think. But, I mean, both spots are amazing in both matches as the end of the match. But that's number three. Number two is, it's the combination. It's the Tiger Faint, a.k.a. 619, caught by Eddie, and then rolled around and, of course, countered with throwing Eddie over the rope to the outside, and of course, then Rey Mysterio with the somersault that's caught by Eddie, and then immediately flipped into a Hurricane Rana. The pattern and the segment, everything. Oh my God, just amazing maneuvers. And then, of course, my number one spot, it's no surprise, the goddamn DDT. The cruiserweight maneuvers and Eddie's got Ray's arms over and he rocks and the rocket thing to where, and you've seen him do it before, and he jumps and he lands on the top rope somehow, and then he just leaps off in the backflip and upon completing the backflip, catches Eddie Guerrero's head and slams him into a DDT. Oh, the crowd went fucking nuts. Tony Schiavone, about it, like, I have never seen anything like this in my life. It was just goddamn amazing. It's like, oh my God, what the hell did I just see? It was like, it's one of the most mind-blowing moves you will ever see. And mind you, it's been done before. You know, I've seen Jeff Hardy do it. I've seen Rey Mysterio do it in WWE. But every time I see it here, it's amazing. As for favorite matches tonight, I think we said number one. But number three would be the very first match, Yuji Nagata versus Ultimo Dragon. Number two would be Jacqueline versus Disco Inferno for its pure entertainment value. But my, like I said, number one, I've been saying it, doesn't need to be said, but I'll say it again. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero in a mask versus title match for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship with Rey Mysterio winning. My God. You know what? This match is... Here's one of my proof of it. Just because of this match alone, this pay-per-view gets a 4 out of 5. And you had all these great matches that followed and everything. And I would consider this pay-per-view a 5 out of 5 if it wasn't for the clusterfuck finish of a match. And I don't mean the finish of the match, but the match itself finishing the pay-per-view was just such a clusterfuck. But there's so much good stuff in this pay-per-view, I feel it's unfair to say that, well, Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero makes it a 4.5, and then all the rest of the stuff can only move it up to a... So, for the first time ever, I'm doing this, I've given this type of rating. This pay-per-view gets a 4.85 out of 5 from me. Because I can't give it a 4.5. And it's certainly even better than a 0.25 increase. But I'm trying to find a middle ground here because that match is such a clusterfuck. But if that match had... Even if that match had just been a simple good versus evil, all they had to do was take out all the things, the fans and everything, where even with interference, it could have been a good match, and I would have gladly given this pay-per-view a 5 out of 5, but I can't, but I feel it's unfair just to give it a 4.5, so 4.85 out of me, so 4.85 out of 5. For WCW Halloween Havoc 1997. I highly, highly, highly suggest you watch this pay-per-view. And I think the right way to watch it is watch it up to the end of the Randy Savage, Diamond Dallas Page match, and then turn it off. Because I don't think you're going to get the ending at all. Because this is a pay-per-view worth watching. So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact us through email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show through our Stitcher account by going to www.stitcher.com. and search for the Absolution Network. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for the Absolution Network, like our fan page. We are the ones with the A and N in the symbol, mind you. Because there are two Absolution Network fan pages. Make sure you do the one where the one with the logo that's still A and N in a circle and a white background. And, of course, you can always contact the show directly by commenting on the post of this episode, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Shin Tekka Girl as videos, along with John Ramos's videos, My Tom's Top 10, and My Tom's Prerogative podcast right here on the Absolution Network. Of course, and of course, you also have the anime cast that you can find. Also, make sure you check out Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast at www.shaftplus.com. And of course, my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network featuring Hexcast, Spectacular Webs, and CM Juice Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy132productions.com. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Maddie J and the WrestleCast at rvtentertainment.com, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Boss, along with From Crisis to Crisis, that he does with his friend Jeffrey Taylor. My good friend Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles podcast. Steven Slaker and the Major Spoilers podcast, in particular the Critical Hit podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner and his Tutu Freaks podcasting network. Along with many more on the sidebar. I can't say bar now, wow. So that is it for this episode of CMQ's Wrestling Reviews. Our next episode will be the final episode, at least for CMQ's Wrestling Reviews, for Monster Mash Month, as we are going to cover the very final Halloween Havoc 2000. And I've already seen a bit of it. All I have to say, Tori Wilson in a Wonder Woman outfit. That right there immediately makes it at least a 3.5. But we'll leave that for next week. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I just want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Today I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibe. I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. I stand on my own two feet, one big blood down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what's the spirit, my love will be holy and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time and start to feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and I don't even know. You're gonna live that fast life, but you're dreaming.